Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Ithaca, New York boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation among 150 waterfalls. Plan your trip today with help from visitithaca.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And thank you.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm the other half of your host, Greg Bresnitz. And here we are with episode 400.
I can't believe, you can't see it, but we're shaking hands.
The culmination of two dudes or one dude with different personalities talking to each other over 400 plus hours.
It's crazy. I want to thank everyone who's helped us really make this possible. Patrick, Jack, Jeet,
Aaron,
Katie, the whole HRN family. Big shout out to the third Snacky Tunes dude, Kong Fan. We couldn't be doing this without you. Shout out to Mom and Dad. It's crazy to be here.
It's really crazy to be here. And thank you to all the guests.
To all the guests who've made time to be a part of this weird little side hobby. To all the bands who's come and played. To all the people who's come into the shipping container, who has let us into their kitchens, or who's just made half an hour to sit down and talk with us. It really, I never thought that this would happen.
No. And what do we have today for today's special episode?
Today's a very special episode. So back in January, we were at the Cayman Cookout, and we sat down with the one, the only, the legendary, the prolific Dominique Krenn. Chef Dominique Krenn.
And we've been sitting on this episode, figuring out a time to run it, when we saw the announcement that she had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
And we thought that we would share her beautiful words on food and poetry and family.
And life.
And life. It truly is absolutely inspirational. So we dedicate this episode to her. We are sending our best well wishes to her.
We're sending all the love and all the fight.
Yes. So, Chef, we're in your corner.
And for our musical guest, we're going to go back to the band that essentially changed
the show.
The show, Freelance Whales. We saw them busking, we saw them play upstairs at pianos, and we thought, maybe bands would be more interesting than us having DJs come and play 17-minute sets. So we asked them to come in, we cleared out the entire studio, laid down five songs, and we went, sounds pretty good. Changed the direction of the show forever. So thank you so much. And they also recorded their own version of the theme song.
Which we'll play at the end. So thank you to all 400 people who have sat back, relaxed, and enjoyed Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, and we are coming to you from the Cayman Cookout.
Nice place.
You like place. It?
Yeah. I mean, if you're into like...
Chef Dominique Cran will introduce you.
I'm Dom.
Hi, Dom.
It's like if you like nice islands at the Ritz-Carlton, then yeah, it's, you know,
yeah.
It's nice.
We just watched you give a very educational and very wonderful presentation. One of the things that you said at the end was that you want to provide inspiration for little girls.
Yes.
And after everything you've done and after everything you've accomplished, it almost could seem like they could not see themselves in you outside of like a biological thing. How do you go about inspiring little girls and giving them kind of like the early steps to either become a chef or just to become a powerful person or to become a strong human being?
You know, I think that what's interesting is if you look at everything that's happening for years, when I was a little girl, I mean, you want to look at someone that kind of looked like you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, many centuries, it was rare to find that, you know? I mean, you can, you know, ask young girl right now, it's just like, what do you want to do? And it's like they want to do this, and they want to look up to someone. And it's rare to find, you know, people. That's not a long time ago that we had the right to vote, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's like, hey, I'm here. This is what I achieve. Doesn't make me better than others, but you can do anything you want. You have to have like confidence, and you are a person is as much valuable than the other.
Who were your role models when you were growing up? Who did you aspire to be?
Well, I was inspired by my dad.
Mm-hmm. Big influence on your life.
Big influence in my life, yes. And I'm here today because of my dad and my mom. My family was just very inspiring. As you know, I was very inspired by, you know, I love Simone Veil. Simone Veil was a politician in mm-hmm. France. She was a survivor of the Holocaust. She created... I think she wrote the law about the abortion in France and all that, so it was very inspiring. All those, you know, Colette was also very inspiring, a writer to me. But like, I was also inspired by men, you know, so I was not just focused on one thing. I was more inspired by people that were doing good in the world.
Mm. Yeah.
Nothing has to do with cooking.
And if you were to, look, Darren just had his first baby girl.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Her name's Josephine.
Ah, Baker.
Josephine Baker, named after our grandfather, Joe. Joe and Little Women, it's my wife's favorite book.
So if you were...
Strong name.
If she were to come, you know, if she were to come to you at 5 years old or whenever she was able to think, what would be the first piece of advice that you would give to her to kind of, you know, that you could think that could guide her in becoming or growing?
What I would tell her is like... You are who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Be confident.
Yes.
Go to this world and just know that no one is better than you, but you're not better than them. And just go and kick some ass.
Yes.
And never say sorry to anyone.
We've given her a bunch of the like little feminist books of just like all these powerful women.
Sure.
And we just like showed her, we're like, this is you.
This is great, yes.
This is you.
This is you.
This is you. You know, watching you up on stage today, the thing that I think seems to excite you so much is food. And then the responsibility that comes with it. And as food has obviously grown more into the... I mean, you've seen it in your career as well. It's a mainstream, it's pop culture now. How do you balance that responsibility as food becomes more well-known, more popular? You know, people just take photos of it and then just sort of discard it. What is your role? What do you feel is your responsibility of teaching people about food?
Well, so for me, food is a language. And food is, you know when you go to a country?
Yeah.
And then if you want to learn about the country, you go directly to the food they're cooking.
And the museum.
And the museum. Food is the core of the society.
Yeah.
And I think people need to do it with balance. I think that sometimes it's crazy to see all those Instagram food. I'm getting tired of it.
Yeah.
As a chef, I'm... But don't see food anymore.
But the flip side is that it does help make... I mean, Instagram is directly responsible for the rise of popularity for people becoming a food than any other social platform.
I think this is great. But I think what I'm asking, if you do that, just be responsible when you do a post.
Yeah.
What does responsible mean to you?
You have to talk about it, and you have to, like, you know, it's like, well, I'm using this, and do a story, have an argument, like, get some narrative about it. You know, everything, for me, everything needs to be done with purpose.
Mm.
If you don't, there is no purpose, then you're not learning anything, you know.
And when you go to a new city, when you just drop in, how do you unlock it? You know, how do you find that first meal?
Well, I think often when I go to a city, I read about the city first.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about the story. And ask also if I know people, it's like I kind of get the insight about the city. I never go to a trendy place.
Okay.
I don't want to go to a trendy. I want to go to, like, if I go to, I'm not going to tell you where I went to New Orleans, but, like, I want to go to the deep, you know, of the city.
You don't want to go on record? You don't want to say where you went?
New Orleans is amazing. It's one of the most amazing cities in the United States.
It's great. And one of the greatest restaurants is Dookie Chase. And that's not, I mean, that's been there for forever.
And then there's also Shank Charcuterie, which is almost like monk-like butcher that lives above the shop and just works seven days. It's incredible.
Commander Palace.
Amazing,
right?
I mean, Commander Palace, which my brother did not know that you needed to wear a collar.
I was turned away at the door.
He was turned away at the door.
I love it.
Yeah,
But Commander Palace is one of those places where you go, I don't know, I got to get dressed up. It's that, and you go there and you go, look at all this tradition, look at all this heritage. My wife and I went there for our anniversary, had a jazz brunch. It was incredible.
I mean, it's just like, it gives you like a window into what the city is about, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, I think people, you know, when they go somewhere, it's nice to learn about the city. It's not to read about it. And then be curious, you know, be curious about, and just come with no expectation.
So San Francisco is a microcosm of a city that's in balance of harmony with the food, people, art. There's also a big imbalance between wealth and poverty and things like that.
That's correct.
And it's easy to say, go to the farm, don't use plastic, things like that, until you look at the time where maybe you don't have resources. Maybe you can't make those choices. What is your best way of giving advice for people who are maybe not as privileged or maybe coming from a different part of life to find that balance when it comes to food or waste and responsibility?
Well, I mean, I think everybody's connecting like, oh, it's too expensive, we can't do that, we don't have the means. You know, I think it's about when you live in a community, if you bring the community together and, you know, like, it's just like, for example, you go to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Or you go to Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that Harlem had the most little garden, community garden.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That in Detroit.
Yeah. It's Detroit. Amazing.
Yeah.
It's not about money. It's about, you know, taking the time and understanding, you know. I think if we bring the community together and if you start to give the knowledge and the tool, it's not about spending a lot of money. I want the world to live and to eat in a way that you don't have to break the bank. I would love that.
And so how does that, is it through community?
I think the community is the, is it would be, this is where you start, you know.
And I also think that it's a balance of, you know, what is enough?
What is enough?
And I think that, like, that's where, you know, capitalism works really well up until a point, but then it just, you know, once you lose sight of it, it just becomes about more and more and more. It's like, hey, this is enough to live, have a place, whatever it might be.
I mean, for me, less is more.
Yeah.
Less is more. And I live like that.
Yeah.
How do you live? I mean, what's a typical...
I mean, I have to tell you, I live in a little house, one bedroom house for like many years, which was 700 square feet.
Mm.
Okay. I just bought a place, and I'm like, at first I'm like, oh, I'm going to look for a house and all that. And I'm like, what am I doing? So I just got, I love the water. I needed to. So I found this like 1970 condo on the water next in Marin outside of San Francisco. Totally, when I walked in, it was just, you know, like popcorn ceiling, you know, like just.
Shag carpet?
Yeah.
Yes.
But I just,
which was kept.
No.
ripped out. Day one.
But I'm like, well, wow, this is great, you know. And then it's just like, so I did like an 8 month renovation, and I did it on my own, like very eco smart and all that. But like, it was just like, for me, it's less is more, you know. And I want to live this way. I'd rather spend my time, you know, helping other than just spending my time at my house when it's like a 5,000 square feet with things that I don't need.
Things you don't need. And you can get oysters up there.
Yeah.
I mean.
Easy.
Mirren County. I mean, just walk into the water, Tamales Bay, just
yeah, I mean, for New Year's, what we did is like stay home.
They only move during New Year's now is to stay home.
Yeah, get some oyster, open them up. I cook a little bit, watch some black and white movie. Roman Holiday and the Artist, amazing.
Amazing.
That's it. Amazing. You know, I'm just looking at the water. It's amazing.
It's great. So. You also have a farm now up in yes. Sonoma County, about a year and a half.
Well, so we took over the farm. The farm was kind of a friend's, very good friend,
yeah.
ex-partner, family, since 2012. Then I decided like a year and a half ago, we need to take care of the farm, and it's all biodynamic and also organic. We have some chicken. It's a no-kill farm.
And what is that, for those who don't know, what does that mean?
A no-kill farm where you can have animals, but you don't kill them.
Mm. They're live fertilizer.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And
but when you really want a chicken, you go, maybe it's time. Your time has come. You just wait. Just wait for them to pass on their own.
No. I hate the chicken. I mean, I love chicken, but I hate the chicken. No, I don't. See, I get the chicken and this whole chicken farming. It's
tough.
It's tough.
It's really tough.
It's tough for me to watch. To see what's going on in America and all over the world.
Not at your farm, but in general. There's some good
No, there's some great, but like
it's Gonstraw right outside of LA.
Yeah, it's just
they do great work.
It's hard, you know, like even like, you know, the pork industry also is hard, you know, for me to watch, you know, and especially where, you know, Britain is it's also a land of like there's a lot of pork. And it's hard for me to know that my parents come from that area sometimes because they don't treat sometimes the animal properly. And I mean, I'm not vegetarian, I'm a carnivore, but
yeah.
If I eat, you know, meat or fish, I want to know that it's a give, you know, give, you have to give back, you know.
And that goes back to that balance where it's like that type of stuff, it's very easy to go in a supermarket. You can see a chicken that's $4 or $14. And you have to make that balance of like, well, maybe I can't have this every single day, but when I do have it, it's really well done. It's a treat almost, and the rest of the time is just more simple, kind of balanced.
Yeah,
diet.
For sure. Yes.
I mean, guilty is the next, but it's hard to have that type of restraint.
Yeah.
And so at the farm, we took it over.
Yeah.
It's no kill. What is the goal with it? Is the goal to supply your restaurants? Is it community?
Oh yeah. So. Yes, first of all, it's going to supply all the restaurants, mm-hmm. which is doing it right now. And it's also a place where we want to bring people here to be educated.
So what does that education look like? Are you bringing up people who live in San Francisco, who want to start their own farms?
So we have a great farmers. Yeah, we want to bring people from San Francisco. We want to bring young from school. Obviously, we bring the people that work with us at all the restaurants. And we also are implementing a program of No Waste.
Mm.
We're working with the farmers. We're going to start to work with this woman, which is great. Yeah, it's a place for everybody to come and have fun, but also to understand that there's a purpose of this farm.
When you showed up to the farm, what was your knowledge of those programs? Did you coming in or like, and if you had to educate yourself, how long did it take for you to educate yourself and implement those systems? Because I think people just see the end result and they don't ever see the steps that it...
This is a lifetime of education. You know, yeah. My parents come from farmers, so I kind of spent a lot of time at the farm, but I don't think there was like a lot of program at the time, mm-hmm. but I know that from my family, a part of it that owned farm, they were very thoughtful about mm-hmm. a lot of stuff. You know, you know, every year you get to educate yourself. You know, you get to get just surround yourself with like we have an amazing farmers right now that know so much about it. So for me, it's like a school. I mean, I'm a student. I go there and I ask a lot of questions. You know, and it's interesting because. You know, you can like, oh yeah, let's grow that for the restaurant, and suddenly you see that maybe there is a row of like vegetables that you're not using, and you're not thinking about it. Oh, what are you gonna do with this?
Right, the responsibility comes back to you to use it.
And they come back, it's like, oh wow, we can maybe give that to somebody else to use it, or we can maybe reuse it to do something. We can do fermentation. We do a lot of fermentation also, so it's nice. You know, education takes time. But you have to be willing to do that.
And so has there been a dish at the restaurant that has evolved?
Been directly inspired
from the farm. Yeah, where it's like, you're like, oh shoot, we have, you know, 1,000 radishes or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but like, is there something that you...
Yeah, that's, yeah, the radishes. Yeah, we did, you know, yes.
It's my favorite dish. It's 1,000 radishes.
Yes,
it's,
yes.
It's
yes.
Great.
But I'm saying, is there something that you saw that where the you went to your chefs and your... and you said, hey, we have all this extra stuff, and it actually ended up becoming a signature dish or something that was beloved?
No, so we, yeah, well, most of the vegetable, you know, I mean, we give them literally, especially actually, petit crin, you know, which is they change the menu a lot, and they have to use it. And they have, and it, first of all, it's great because it makes you creative.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do with it, you can learn, you know, like if you get like a broccoli, for mm-hmm. example, you know, often people use
just the florets.
The florets, and they don't do anything with.
I've been
the stock. It's amazing.
I've been doing it. I've been peeling it and chopping it and roasting it.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's delicious. You know, you don't think about it. You have to think about this. But I mean, I think we had actually when we had the radishes. Mm. Yeah, it was amazing.
I know
this is
a joke, but
you
yes,
know,
yeah.
we made some miso months ago, and we use it, and we use it on the radish. It was delicious, you know. So we have to think that way, you know, and it's also make us better and understanding better about what it is, you know, and not be conventional about things.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. Because we're going to come back and do part two.
Oh, part two, okay.
Yes. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Live from the Cayman Cookout.
Live from the Cayman Cookout. Thank you, Chef Repair, for bringing us all down.
Yeah.
Thanks, bud. Here we go. Back to Snacky Tunes. We are still in the Cayman Islands at the Cayman Cookout.
Are we still there?
Yes. Sorry, the Grand Cayman Islands. The Grand Cayman Islands. We are here with Chef Dominique Crenn, who just gave an awesome, I would say it was a demo, but also it was more of a fireside chat
Yes, always.
Always.
You have, you know, it's, food is about communicate to others. Can you imagine if I just like did the demo and like you guys didn't talk? How boring is that?
I've seen it. Yeah. I've been to enough where I go, so that guy came in for 15 minutes. That was cool, yeah. I guess.
You're incredibly generous with your time. Is that something for that you just know as like as a hospitality side of things? Some chefs know they just have to do it because it's part of the game, but it seems very natural to you.
Yeah, I think it's important to a connection with others. For me, it's a very important, yes.
No.
Yes.
Speaking of being generous with your time, you have helped create and are ambassador for the Root Project.
Yes.
Which you've taken, because I know a lot of people ask you, what are you going to do outside of San Francisco? What is your, are you going to have a more restaurant? Are you going to go to Vegas? And I love that you're have your restaurants in San Francisco, but your reach and your awareness and your help with the community is global. For people who are not familiar with the Root Project, what is it?
So Root Project started about almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
February is going to be 2 years. Haiti is a beautiful country,
mm-hmm.
and it's been destroyed for the last...
Since the hurricane.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, earthquake, hurricane, also the corruption out there. It's like, and the people out there. So my very good friend is Asian, and we were just talking one day, and we were talking about Haiti, and I've never been there, and I start to learn about it. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to go out there and see what we can do out there. And then what happened, you know, did some research, but a lot of people, like, you know that a lot of money were supposed to go to mm-hmm. Haiti. I mean, nothing went there.
Nothing went.
And then what we realized that you need to go out there, meet the community, and ask them really what they want. So we went to the mountain, and the most beautiful things in Haiti is there is no pesticide, by the way. Which is
go on.
Very trashy, but like there's a lot of trash, but there is no pesticide.
In yeah. Haiti. You but how do that. They do, what's their climate, or I guess, what's going on in America where it's all pesticide, all big ag, for the most part, for the gross population of food growth, how do they get away with that in Haiti, without having pesticide?
Well, it's just it's everything, the land is like, it can grow so many things, you know, but mostly for coffee and chocolate,
right.
You know. And they're trying to get like, but there is no pesticide. I don't know. It's just because they can't afford maybe that. I don't know. That which is great.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we went up to the mountain. It was amazing. So we were like, I met those tribe basically, and I just you know we had to be very respectful, which is, was amazing. I mean, I learned so much. And then I met with the top of the tribe, and I was just asking questions. And I remember it was like, we don't need your money. We just want tool. And we want to have our children go to school. We want to put food on the table, and nobody is helping us to do that. So we realized that okay, what are you guys doing? It's like so they're doing coffee. Coffee is a big thing out there, and obviously, so it was about to give them trees to plant. And trees is very important, you know. It's also life, you know. And it was just like you know. I think a tree costs 50 cents.
But it gives so much more.
It gives so much more, yeah.
It gives them their livelihood, it gives them respect, yeah. It gives them a purpose.
Yeah.
And so how many trees have been planted and what's the goal for our planting?
I mean, we want to plant 1 million trees. And I think we are like, 100,000 right now.
Which right. Is like, and where can people go if they want to give money for trees?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. It's been...
Been ebbs and flows?
Yes.
Yeah.
But not that great.
What are some of the roadblocks that come up in this? After the intentions are set, what are some of the real life challenges?
I think you have to keep talking about it.
Hmm.
And I think is there's so many things out there that that people want to give money to. I feel that sometimes people give money to the wrong.
Always.
Well,
always.
But not only that is that there are people who create fake charities.
Yeah, and I don't like that, you know. I mean, my friend lives in Haiti also. She lives in the Cap Haitian. And it's hard. It's an island that has been forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a part of, next to Dominican Republic, but it's a country that has been forgotten. Nobody cares about Haitian. And I don't know why. It's like they are just amazing people. We need to care about them, you know. The same thing what happened in Puerto Rico. Nobody cared about what happened.
No, and it's crazy that
and
they
Rosie
were out of
has done an amazing job, you know, going out there. But like, come on, we need to care about the world. We can't be selfish to be where we are today, you know.
I mean, it's so crazy that people have a perception that like immigrants are lazy or that they don't want to work or they just
That's
want to forget. And it's just so not true. I mean, you know, we're second generation immigrants. You're an immigrant in America.
Yes.
And there are so many people, and just from, especially the people in Haiti, it's like, we don't want money. We want the right to work.
Yes.
How do you feel responsible for changing that perception in America with the work that you do?
And also, what opportunities do you provide in your kitchens for people who are coming to, either immigrants or for people who are underserved?
So, the idea, so when we built this company, my idea was my partner, was not just like opening restaurant. It was, we wanted to create a place where people can be who they want to be. We can also a place where they can learn. We give them the tools. We help them to educate themselves if they want to take courses or things like that, but they can grow with us. And that's very important to us. It's not about like being the best restaurant in the world. Like, we don't care about this. We want to create this community where people feel that they are safe, but they also can learn. And they come from all over the place.
What's interesting, though, is that you are one of the best restaurants in the world. You are one of the, if not the top female chef. Do you think that environment of safe space and growth directly feeds into the ability to be operating at that high of a caliber? Or do you think it's like your will that drives it?
Well, so I will say that the reason where we are today, because we created a culture that is pretty amazing. And when you create a great culture, I mean, there is great energy. Those people are just, I'm my DNA, and they help me, you know, they help the restaurant to be where we are. Yeah. So yes, it's because of maybe what we created that we are where we are today.
So with everything that you've achieved, and the popularity, how much do you feel rest on your shoulders? Like, how much do you feel that you need to give back to the community? How much do you feel that you need to share your time with people?
I mean, it's been, I don't know, since I was born, I think I always thought that this is something, that's why I'm here.
Is that from your dad and your mom?
Yeah.
As a new father, I'd like to know, you know, what were the lessons that your dad passed on to you that have guided you when there was no map, or where you were just had to make the decisions on the precipice? What were the kind of intangible lessons that they taught you that gave you, as much as you can be sure about anything, the ability to move through these complex decisions?
Okay, so if you want to know a little bit about me, so you all know that I was adopted, right?
Yes.
So I was adopted, obviously born in France, but don't know where I come from, whatever. So, but I had like incredible parents that just, you know, want to teach me about the world, teach me about diversity, because obviously my brother and I were adopted. He's not my brother, but he's not my blood brother, but it's my brother. So it was already this sitting where you hear and you have to embrace diversity. They taught me to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
They taught me to be confident. They taught me about to be also to listen to others. They taught me that also being aggressive is not a good way of doing things. They taught me that you have to go out there and to learn something that we don't know. Like, if you know, you live in France, you grow up in France. I grew up Catholic and all that, but doesn't mean that other community, even if different, you know, place and culture or religion, you need to be able to understand it also. Mm. So that's a very early age, and they allow us also to travel all over the world. Openness. That was a long time ago. Politics also was a big part of my upbringing, and I think very young age, I was just always curious. Like, I was always asking questions. Sometimes I fought with my father, just because about politics, about religion, about sport, whatever, you know. But like, it was always
sports were the biggest fights.
But
right?
it's like, if you have children, you have to be engaged with them.
Yes.
Engage yourself and let them tell you things that they think and they see, you know. Don't tell them what you do. I mean, obviously there is some rule.
Yeah.
Don't go out there like just light a fire somewhere.
Yeah. Don't.
But it's
yeah.
like, listen to your kids, you know, because it's important, because they're gonna be their own. And if you, you know, I remember my parents told me, it's like, okay, then you want to go out, you want to go drink, you want to smoke, you want to do all that, great. There is consequences.
Yeah. Consequences from them, or just consequences from life?
No, from life.
Oh, yes.
And they tell you what it is.
Yeah. I mean, life can get, and should at times, get messy.
Yeah.
And it's how you deal with that mess, cleaning up that mess,
yeah.
that makes you a better person.
Absolutely. But you have to make, you know, you have to go through the struggle to become a better person. But so it was, you know.
One of the other things that your dad gave you was a love of poetry.
Yes.
Which I think.
Not just poetry, art.
Art and poetry. Which our parents did as well, which I didn't really deeply appreciate until I got a little bit older. Because we'd be like dragging us through museums and go, what are we doing here?
Yeah, super art is super important.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you are.
Food and art. You gotta. That's what you gotta do when you get to a city.
And you can see it in the plating of your dishes. It's obviously not just plating, it's obviously an artistic aesthetic that comes from it. I was curious, which artist. Speaks the most to your condition? Who reaches into your soul the most and pulls you out?
Let's make it a two-part question. Which artist reaches to the happy part of your soul, and then which artist reaches to the tortured artist?
To the dark part.
Yes. Yeah, do you see like McGree with the girl eating the bird, and you go like, yes.
You know, it's interesting, like most artists are like a dark side.
I know,
a happy side.
Yeah.
If you look at Dali, you know, Dali, yeah. I love Dali, it's just like, Jean-Michel Basquiat also,
I mean, just violent and dark and tortured.
Yeah, like, but I think you have to. I think when you're looking at those, it's just like you have to look at it as you said, balance. You know, you're just trying to get into their head, but you don't want to go to that dark part of it. But you have to understand it too, just to get to understand. And you feel here, which is amazing. You know, I mean, I've cried in museum.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
just looking at. Like, I'm very emotional, you know, I just like, I can see, I can feel, it's beautiful, you know. I mean, if you read a Baudelaire or, you know, I mean, Jean La Fontaine also is pretty cool, but like a lot of different, you know, poet or writers or things like that, also you can feel their struggle, but that's why art is about. It's not just about happiness.
Mm-mm.
It's about being vulnerable to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a true artist is someone that is very vulnerable. So you have to bring the happiness also and the darkness out of you.
Do you feel vulnerability in the dishes that you present?
Always.
And in what way can you put words to that vulnerability? And as an addendum to that, you know, going out to eat, especially at a high-end place, you know, you want people to enjoy and be happy and it's an experience,
yes.
But there is emotion and sometimes pain behind the dishes. How do you balance that with people who are supposed to be coming out and sort of escaping and having this meal?
Well, I think when you create something, it's really up to you to just get to the final product and to make sure everything is balanced, you know. I remember in 2012, it was one of my most emotional menu. It was in the spring, because a month back, I was taking care of, I went to visit this little girl called Hannah, and she was 11 years old, and she had leukemia, and she literally passed away. And I connected with her. She was writing poetry, and I spent a few time with her. And that menu that I wrote in the spring was all about what I experienced with her.
What was like the most heartbreaking dish?
Well, I think I did a lot of, I think it was like a fish dish that I did. And I remember when I walked into the hospital, it was like a big aquarium. Mm. And then she held my hand, and we just like look at the aquarium and look at like the fish and whatever was inside. And we were like, just thinking that it was the ocean, and we were looking at the ocean. And I think when I did that dish, I was like, oh, that was hard for me.
I mean, so many.
Because you remember, you know, you remember that moment where, like, you have that little hand in your pop-up hand, and it's like this amazing little girl that's write poetry and telling you about the world, and then a few days later, she's gone.
And did your regulars notice the heaviness or the sadness in the menu? It would be tough if it was a one-time thing, but did people notice the emotional depth and weight?
I don't
or did
know.
Or did your chefs notice? Did someone pick up on it, or was it just, you know, Dominique's, like, internal artistic expression?
What I can tell you that since we opened, I can tell you that a lot of people come and just cried. Literally, they cry when they eat some of my food. So what I know that this is for me. I'm not going to tell them too much of the story, but if they connect something and trigger something in their head when they eat, that this is, you know, the other day I was like, this lady was like eating and she's like, she cried about, you know, a dish, and she's like, oh my God, this is exactly, remind me when I was with my dad. It's crazy and it's beautiful.
So with that beauty, with that emotion, with the responsibility and things like that, what's next? Like, how do you take all of that and continue to grow, both in the restaurants but out in the world? Is there more charity work? Is there more poetry? Is there more art? You know, is it bigger, or do you bring things back in and be more focused?
I think I'm trying to be more focused right now, and I think I talk about charity and all that, but what I'm very passionate and about the planet right now and climate change. I mean, you just had a baby, right?
I did. Right. Future is hers. I mean, well, I know.
But we are responsible to make sure we set up the future, but we are in trouble right now.
Yeah, it's bad.
The planet is bad. And so we had to put in motion things, you know, that help to facilitate a better world for the generation to come. If we don't do that, we become very selfish, you know. I mean, I was watching the other day this young 15 years old at the climate change in Europe. It's amazing.
The girl was incredible.
Incredible.
She, like, phenomenal.
And it was just like,
I know.
I mean, I've been passionate about it, but, like, you see that the youngster know that this something is not right.
She was so direct yet eloquent in her speech. It was phenomenal.
The awareness
is there.
And then unfortunately there's people who are 15 and think that climate change is a joke.
But you know what, this is it's we are the people, we are the one that's going to change things, and we need to help the next generation to go. Some people not going to believe, whatever, you know, there's nothing you can do about these people, but we have to do the work, and the work started yesterday.
Last question, because I want to know, do you have any French poems memorized that you could recite to us that was something that your dad taught you or something that stayed with you?
No.
A, because French is the most beautiful language.
Oh, no, you put me on the spot right now.
Yes, and we will edit out the pause.
I mean, if I had it in front of me, I can read it, but, like, it's...
Then for that, then what is your, again, the poem that speaks the most to you?
Le Fleur du Mal.
And why is that?
It's twisted.
There you go.
Perfect.
Well, Chef, we can't thank you enough. It's an honor to sit down with you, talk with you. Thank you for sharing some thoughts.
Thank you.
Quickly, because we know that you want to make sure people come and visit you, where can they find you? How can they follow you? How can they get a hold of
a table?
I
mean, if they come to San Francisco, come to see me. We have Atelier Crane, Petit Crane, Bar Crane. Just come and enjoy the city. There is amazing restaurant. There is amazing people. If you want to come and hang out at the Bar Crane, it's like have a glass of wine or a bite to eat. Just let me know. Just come to California. It's a beautiful...
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I love it there.
Yeah. And bring your own coffee cup.
Yes, bring your own coffee cup.
What about your own wine glass?
You can do that. We have a glass over there.
Well, thank you so much. We are having another song from the archives and then a live band here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Live from the Cayman Cookout.
Grand Cayman.
Grand Cayman.
Grand Cayman Islands, Cayman Cookout. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Chef.
Thank you, Chef.
Wait, thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Located in New York's Finger Lakes region, Ithaca boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation. As the saying goes, Ithaca is gorgeous. The city is home to 150 waterfalls and gorges sprinkled through its downtown and sloping hillsides. State parks and acres of natural lands offer outdoor recreation for every level of enthusiast. Come stroll among the cool ravines, scenic hiking trails, and natural vistas. Ithaca is home to Ivy League Cornell University and Ithaca College, resulting in an influx of new cultures, new tastes, and new energy every year. There's so much to explore, from art galleries and museums to unique attractions like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Ithaca sits at the heart of a blossoming heritage and craft cider industry. Some of these delicious ciders can be bought in market, but many of the most unique varieties can only be experienced with a visit to Ithaca and this great cider region. Go to visitithaca.com to get inspired and plan your trip today.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Jenna Liut, and I'm the host of Eating Matters here on HRN. Join me as I talk to food systems experts about the issues that shape our experiences of buying, cooking, and eating food. You can find Eating Matters wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
So in studio today, you've already heard from them, we have Freelance Wales. Welcome, the five of you.
Hey.
Do you want to go through and say who you are and what you do in the band, and then what you do in life?
Sure.
Yeah. We'll start left.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about you, Jake?
Oh, hey, I'm Jake. I'm the drummer, and I'm also a freelance writer in life.
I'm Doris, and I play bass and harmonium and glockenspiel, and sometimes I play synth.
What do you do?
What do I do? This is what I do.
Yeah, my name is Kevin. I mostly play guitar, but I also play synths and bells and harmonium. Yes, and I'm recently unemployed.
Congratulations! Welcome to the ranks.
Thank you.
My name is Chuck. I am also unemployed, except for this band, and I'm a multi-instrumentalist. Kind of just play whatever needs to get played. So we do a lot of switching of instruments. You know, banjo, guitar, synthesizers, all that good stuff.
Hey, I'm Judah, and I also play banjo, synthesizers, bass guitar, and we all sing, by the way, too.
Yeah,
yes.
Very important.
Yeah, it is.
That's
it
what
is
you important. Heard earlier.
Harmonies. Yeah. Harmonies. So the first time that I saw you guys was busking, I believe on Bedford.
Yeah.
And then also on First and First, on that little area. And I was like, huh, you are, I think, one of the three bands that I stopped to watch ever in busking that was not like you're standing next to me while I'm waiting for my train. So, and I was like, but I'm like, what are the odds of ever finding out who this band is? You know, and I don't want to ask because you guys are playing. But then, yeah, so that's, I know. Well, that's my own fault. It could have been a misconnection. However, Brooklyn Vegan Day Show at Pianos during CMJ. You guys killed it. Favorite thing that I saw during CMJ. And then I harassed your manager, Andrew, for about a month and a half to have you guys on the show. So here we are.
Thank you.
So tell us what you've been up to since CMJ. You guys are record signings, things, big deals.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff happened since CMJ. We did our very first tour, which
was very empowering. And you know, the whole idea of touring, like, we had this hypothetical notion in our head that we might, like, actually be able to tour. But it was kind of daunting. And so we went out for our first 6 weeks tour, and it was like full perimeter of the US and a little bit in Canada. And we kind of learned what that's all about. And I think we came out on the better end of it. So we did that.
And that was opening for Fan Farlow, British band.
Yeah. Not a band, mad band to open
cool,
for.
England.
No, no.
Yeah. That was, some
it, was,
red coats.
It was really wonderful.
Now, you know, for those who haven't seen you, it's a very interesting setup. You guys sort of play, it's not like staggered like most bands. You guys sort of play like in a horizontal line. And you guys talk about like how you developed your live show and like the switching of instruments and things like that.
I guess, well, the switching of instruments is more of a kind of
like a
to enhance the show. Yeah, necessity, but also like enhance the show. It makes the show more interesting. You like watch a band just playing the same instruments the whole time. It kind of gets a little stale, so kind of like help switch around, kind of, and makes the live show a little bit interesting to watch.
I think the idea also too is that, like, so our writing process is really, I think, different than a lot of bands, because we don't write out of like a rehearsal space. We write, or at least with this first project, it was more in like a recording space. So if you're just laying down a lot of instruments, sometimes when it comes to like playing them live, it's going to be like more convenient to play certain instruments based on who's singing and who's doing what. So there's this whole duality of like doing it. I mean, certainly there's like the component of like it being cool to see in a show, but also like it'd be really difficult to do some songs like having a certain person singing, playing a certain instrument. So it's like there's a practical element to why we switch the instruments around.
So you mentioned, so Doris, you said you're Queens native.
Yeah.
And the rest of you guys are here for 2 years. So Doris, did you play in bands here? And how did you guys all meet?
I've been playing music my whole life. I started off singing when I was, I think, 7. I used to sing with my best friends, Natalie Nicole and Nina Sky. And they moved to Roosevelt Island. And I picked up the drums around 13. And I started an all-girl band. Which carried on for 2 years. And then I started playing guitar, then bass, then I'm looking for a band, and now I'm here with the Freelance Whales. Yeah. And
Nikki, tell them about the Doxies.
Doxies. Yeah, I was in an all-girl band for 2 years. I played drums, and it was pretty wild. We got to open up for Luna Chicks at Continental when that was still around.
Whoa. All right. Boom.
Yeah, that's all.
That was your official I was there moment of the show today.
What she's not telling you is that she used to play the drums like a little badass with her jaw wired shut.
Oh my god. Yeah, I was just gonna bring that up.
It's
awesome
though. She's like Kanye behind the drum kit. And then the two chicks up front would play shows topless, right?
Yeah. They would play, well, three girls. I was the only one who was shy about it. But they were like raging lesbians, so it was cool, you know. They were totally all about it. But we actually ended up playing in Greenpoint when it wasn't really all it is right now. So it was really interesting to see the scene develop, and I'm really lucky I got to experience that.
So you're from Queens. Favorite place to go eat in Queens?
Opa.
What is that?
It's a Greek restaurant. They have the best gyros, right next to. Well, actually, the best gyros. Well, BZ Grill is competition for Opa, but Opa is on 31st Street, right under the train station, 30th Avenue train stop on the N. It's really good. The best Greek avgo lemon soup I've ever had.
Sweet. So why don't we have you guys play a song? Oh. Come back, we'll talk about the release, the digital release, the upcoming tour tomorrow.
Yeah.
And We're gonna do what you call like a walkout. So we're gonna say stuff while you guys get ready. Check this out.
Yeah.
So you
that's
have been listening to Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Very excited. Freelance Whales in the studio setting up for another song. Big shout out to Roberta's meatball throwdown at the Meat Hook this Friday. And Jack Inslee and Rec Tech for helping us sound so awesome. And to Whole Food Market for taking up the reins and being our sponsor this week. If you haven't heard of Whole Foods, you are living in a rock, or you are very dedicated to the Locavar movement. I'm Terry Diabolik. To the right of me is DJ Never Forget. And this is Freelance Whales live on Snacky Tunes
Take it away, guys.
We're gonna tune up really quick.
Fantastic. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. That is just Free Run Swales Live. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This is awesome. We're going to bring you, come back right behind the microphones. Yeah. We're going to ask you a few more questions, and then you're going to play us out. What was the name of that song?
That was called Starring.
And is that anywhere for me to buy in a pre-recorded format?
It is currently available on iTunes, but it will be further available in a hard copy, both of the archaic compact disc and the even more archaic vinyl.
My goodness.
That is on March 16th via French Kiss Mom and Pop Records.
I feel like you guys are going to do a lot of vinyl sales. You got that sound of the type of people who are like, I want this on record.
Oh.
Who's doing the artwork? What do we got?
Oh, well, so there's a lot of artwork involved in the record, and it's something we've had for a little while now. My girlfriend was enough to donate this sort of hand-sewn cover that she did. And it's like kind of like a little pastoral landscape with a sunset and this little house on it, which is actually a house out there in the real world. This little Japanese tea house. And so she did the cover art. And then some...
You can say her name. She's an artist.
Her name's Erin Kennedy. She's actually an architect, so this isn't the kind of thing she normally does.
Oh! Who was that?
That's like a kiss sound.
I thought that was terrible.
I thought it was you guys.
I thought that was terrible. I was like, that is so unprofessional.
We don't need that sound bank. We just need Vans in here.
How is Doris blushing from this?
She kind of likes that. In any case, so there's that, and then there's also some really beautiful illustrations on the booklet on the inside done by a Chilean illustrator named Joaquin Cochina.
That's awesome. Yeah. So that's a while between now and then. I guess you can buy iTunes, but if I wanted to see you, where would I go?
If you wanted to see us play live?
Yeah, and I wasn't like wandering around the freezing cold. Are you guys still busking now?
Cold for that.
Yeah.
We've been out of town so much.
Wait a second. I now have do you just set up or do you actually have to go through proper permits?
We just set up.
Yeah, okay. It's kind of guerrilla style.
Okay. So you guys have been out of town and you're going out of town again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Well, going to Cleveland.
Yes.
Cleveland. Chicago. Indiana.
Yeah. We're going to have some Skyline chili.
Oh, you really? You're going to get the... what are those hot dogs? The cheese conies.
Oh, that would be lovely. Ooh.
Do you know what those are?
Yeah, let's just talk about food.
Sounds good.
Cheese conies, because I went to Cleveland first time last February. Cheese conies, actually, I take that back. I'm going to stop because I'm thinking about Cincinnati.
Oh, no.
Anyway, so what do you guys, when you guys are on the road, since there's five of you, mm-hmm. how does the process of eating break down? Is there a food leader or do you go your separate ways? Come on in. Pop right up. So what's the food process? Hit me.
Well, I like to buy fresh produce and the guys like to eat whatever's available. So I'll hold on.
That's not true.
That's a lie.
It's true.
That's a lie. You just want yogurt and apples and we want like lots of different local things.
Yeah, that's
you said cool. You said lots of local things. Are you talking about like just restaurants or?
I'd kind of like to find like the local place, or diner, or you know, it doesn't have to be like organic local ingredients. But like in Pittsburgh, there's this place called Pamela's that had the best pancakes I've ever eaten in my life, and I hope to visit there again when we're in Pittsburgh on sometime this weekend.
Last time I was in Pittsburgh too, and I cannot remember, but they have the sandwich there. It's like a small chain, and it's like sandwich, fries. And coleslaw on a thing. If you just ask anybody, it's like, where's the place with the sandwich and the fries and coleslaw? Because that's how I was told to ask it there. I cannot.
I'm pretty sure you can just go, I'm looking for the sand, and they just cut you off. So best meal on the road? What did you guys memorable?
Probably New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
What'd you have in New Orleans?
It was pretty good.
Alligator.
A little bit. Yeah, it was like kind of a...
Big sampler.
We ate alligator.
Eating frogs.
And how was it?
It was a little like chicken.
It tastes like chicken. It really is the true like tastes like chicken joke, but alligator really does taste. Yeah.
It looks like
the
chicken.
The texture
too.
Is a little bit more like lobster though.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
It's good, but they usually spice it up.
Really? I can't eat lobster, so now I'm gonna have alligator.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I feel like the alligator and like monkfish too sometimes.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
Texture.
I love it. So you guys are going all over, and when are you playing New York next?
Oh,
Wednesday the 20th at Mercury Lounge.
Headlining, opening?
Headlining.
Boom! Boom!
You know first
headlining.
New York.
Woo!
That's true.
So, almost sold out, I think, TicketWeb, right?
Yeah, it's on TicketWeb.
TicketWeb, listen, you're going to want to see them at the Mercury before. What was it? So, I guess February next year, Terminal 5, 3 sold out.
It'll be March, Terminal 5, headlining sold out. So, see them now because just trajectory just goes whoop.
Especially now that we've put our stamp.
Yeah. by the way, that place was Primanti Brothers. When you go back, there's like a bunch of them. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. Primanti Brothers. I mean, we might talk before then. Who knows?
Who knows?
Nice.
Who knows? So anything else? Because we're going to have you guys play one more song and we're getting dangerously close to anything you want to say?
No. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thanks for the pizza.
Oh, well, that's Roberta's.
Yeah, the pizza
thanks,
is
Roberta's.
Great. And the artichoke. That was artichoke, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, right. I guess the last thing too to say is that show what we were just talking about at Mercury, we'll be playing with another band that we really love called Animal Tropical, who are somehow virtually unknown, but they're incredible.
Well, that's what happens.
So from Miami,
you get to get bigger, and then you get to bring your friends along.
Yeah, it's weird because they're not even our friends. We just think they're so good. Oh.
We hate those guys. We just like the music.
They're not our friends yet.
Wait, and what was there was? And we were gonna have them DJ, but the live stuff was so good, and it's already set up. There was another band you wanted to shout out. What was that band? The CD you just handed me, Paul.
Local Natives.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Shout them out, Local Natives.
Hey, Local Natives.
Well, so French kiss with
they're
us.
Like new label mates of ours, and they have a really beautiful record called Gorilla Manor that's out in what, February?
February 16th.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So we're gonna
February
have
February 16th.
So we're gonna have you guys set up for one more song. All of this will be available on our podcast, and you can stream this on Heritage Radio Network. And we'll probably rip the MP3s and work with Paul to just kind of get these out there too. How's that sound, Paul?
We'll figure it out.
We'll get these to you. This is great. And I'll just say, if you like this, their live show is also different. So this is nice for all you fans of like the live acoustic stuff because it's recorded. And yes, next week on the show we have Yacht doing a mixtape and I believe a call-in from Outer Space. What do you say? And we have Food Guest. It's always a mystery. The food world is... and also we will be talking next week a little bit more. We had mentioned it 2 weeks ago about D'Artagnan's 25th anniversary. We didn't get to it today, but we have the list of programming. All I gotta say is they have a $600 dinner with a combined of like 32 Michelin star chefs. It's something your stomach can dream of. Anyway, so you are listening to Snacky Tunes with Freelance Whales live in the studio. You can pre-order their album on InSound right now. It's out in March. They're playing the Mercury Lounge on the 20th. It is awesome. Thank you to Whole Foods for sponsoring the show. Jack Inslee, Rec Tech, as always, making us sound good. We are Finger on the Pulse. This is Snacky Tune. Once again, Freelance Whales.
Thanks for having us.
What's the song called?
Kilo Jules.
talking about food.
Food.
We're talking about music.
Music.
We're musical dudes.
Dudes.
Finger on the pulse. Snacky too.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right-hand side of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.